Welcome to the Deep Dive. If you're joining us for the first time, our mission here is to basically take a stack of really complex sources and, well, extract the mechanisms that matter to you.
Yeah, we really want to get to the core of it.
Exactly. And today we're looking at some incredibly dense research papers detailing the ODE CCT system, and we're going on a deep dive into these sources to uncover what's basically a mathematical cheat code.
It really is a cheat code, yeah.
Right. Specifically, we're looking at this radical shift in how computers actually simulate reality. We're moving away from traditional physics simulations that, map physical space, and instead we're looking at a system that uses these things called Cinco's matrices.
Right, sine and cosine.
Yeah, and it uses them to instantly solve mysteries ranging from like stable chemical cycles all the way to black hole radiation.
It's a profound shift in perspective, really, if we connect this to the bigger picture. For decades, computing the future essentially meant mapping out where things physically are and then, grinding the math forward to see where they go next.
Step by step.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what we're exploring today is the realization that if you map when things repeat rather than where they are, the computational roadblocks just, well, they vanish.
Okay, so let's unpack this a bit because to really appreciate how wild this cheat code is, we kind of have to look at the old way of doing things first. If you're listening to this and you've ever, say, played a weather simulation game or watched a 3D model render, you are looking at numerical integration.
Right.
It's like walking down a pitch black road with a tiny flashlight. You only see one step ahead. You
Yeah.
calculate your exact position. You take one step, you recalculate, and you take another, just step by step by step.
Precisely. And that flashlight method is mathematically driven by what we call a band matrix.
A band matrix. Okay.
Yeah, so if you picture a giant spreadsheet or a grid of numbers representing a physical system, a band matrix clusters all the really important non-zero numbers right along a diagonal line down the middle.
Oh, okay.
That tight little strip, or band, encodes what we call spatial locality. It literally represents the cost of communication.
So it's essentially saying, like, I am a data point, and I only care about the data points physically touching me.
Exactly.
It's like a neighborhood gossip network, Information can only travel from house to adjacent house. If a rumor starts on the east side of town, the west side won't know about it until the gossip physically travels across every single lawn.
That is exactly how standard computing handles physics. It encodes near neighbor interactions. But, and here's the shift, the framework in our sources throws that spatial restriction out completely. It replaces the band matrix with a Cinco's matrix.
Right.
In this new grid, the numbers aren't clustered on a diagonal strip. Instead, they form literal periodic patterns, like actual sine and cosine waves that ripple through the entire matrix.
Oh.
Yeah, so this structure doesn't encode spatial locality at all. It encodes temporal periodicity. It's the cost of memory. It basically says that cycles matter more than physical distance.
So if the band matrix is the neighborhood gossip, the Cinco's matrix is kind of like a seasonal festival.
I like that.
Right. If you think about the winter solstice, it doesn't matter that last year's solstice and this year's solstice are separated by a massive distance in time like 365 days.
Right.
The matrix doesn't care about the chronological distance. It only cares that the cycle perfectly repeats. It links states based on their phase in a cycle, not their proximity in physical space.
Yes. You're linking states based on harmonic coupling.
Right.
Now, to compare the performance, in standard computing, a band matrix requires an algorithm like Gaussian elimination to solve the system.
Which is heavy.
Very.
Yeah.
If you have n data points and your band is k items wide, the computational cost is written as big O of n times k O n k. That means the computer has to physically grind through calculating every single neighbor connection for every single point step by step.
Right.
If you have millions of points, that is just a massive, heavy computational lift.
Which, brings up a really important question for anyone trying to actually use this math. If a wavy grid, the Cinco's matrix, is just linking cycles instead of neighbors, how does that actually translate into the computer running faster? I mean, a matrix is still just a massive grid of numbers to a computer processor, isn't it?
Well, it comes down to the hidden architecture of those specific waves. The sources highlight two specific setups inside the ODE CCT framework. You have variant one, which is the discrete sine matrix, and variant three, the circulant sinusoidal matrix.
Okay.
And because these matrices are constructed entirely from periodic patterns, their eigenstructure, which is essentially the mathematical skeleton holding the matrix together, is naturally built on the Fourier basis.
Okay, the Fourier basis. For those of us who, haven't taken advanced calculus recently,
Right,
we're
yeah.
talking about breaking complex information down into pure fundamental frequencies, right?
Exactly. Think of it like a musical chord. Instead of a computer trying to process the complex vibration of the entire chord over time, the Fourier basis instantly identifies, oh, this is just a C, an E, and a G played together.
Oh, that makes sense.
And because the literal DNA of a Cinchos matrix is made of these frequencies, complex mathematical operations, like multiplying or inverting the grid, are secretly just fast Fourier transforms, FFTs.
So you aren't doing that grueling ONK math anymore? You don't have to calculate every neighbor's interaction sequentially?
No, you drop entirely into the frequency domain. By using FFTs, you compute at O of n log n speeds.
Wow.
Yeah, in physical terms, instead of counting every single item one by one across a massive grid, you're processing the pure frequencies of the entire system globally all at once. The speed difference in a real-world computation is just astronomical.
But wait, I need to challenge this a little, because skipping the heavy lifting sounds great, but we still have a physical system moving through time. Let's go back to the flashlight metaphor. Normally, computers simulate time step by step to track the changes. Are you saying that by jumping into the frequency domain, we skip the simulation entirely?
We do.
But how can you possibly know the destination if you don't calculate the journey?
What's fascinating here is that the framework proves you can skip the journey, provided the system is periodic. The sources detail a principle called XYFLW.
XYFLW.
Right. It states that if you have a linear ordinary differential equation driven by a Cinchos structure, you don't need numerical integration. We switch from numerical approximation to symbolic computation.
Symbolic computation, meaning we aren't like guessing the curve point by point anymore.
Right. Numerical integration is inherently an approximation. Every step you take with your flashlight introduces a tiny rounding error, and those errors compound over time. But symbolic computation gives you a closed form expression. The solution is already mathematically baked into the sine and cosine of the system's eigenvectors. You don't step through time. You literally just read the final answer from the equation.
That's crazy.
It guarantees 100% accuracy on the boundaries of the cycle with absolutely no neural network approximations and zero stepping errors.
Okay, I'm starting to visualize this. It's like having a perfect map of a racetrack. We don't need to simulate a car driving every single inch of the track to know it will eventually cross the finish line. We just look at the geometric shape of the track itself.
Exactly.
But let me push back again. If we are completely abandoning step-by-step tracking, how do we mathematically guarantee that these cycles are actually stable? Like, how do you know the track doesn't secretly just spiral off a cliff?
That is a critical issue, and it brings us to how the framework analyzes stability and detects limit cycles. A limit cycle is exactly what you just described, a stable, repeating loop in a dynamical system. To mathematically guarantee that a cycle is stable without simulating it forever, the framework uses something called a Poincaré matrix.
A Poincaré matrix? How should we visualize that?
Imagine you have a water hose bent into a perfect loop with water flowing through it. If you want to understand the flow without tracking every single water droplet around the entire circle, you just slice the hose in half and look at the circular cross-section.
Okay, I'm with you.
The Poincaré matrix is that cross-section. It tracks how the system's states map back onto that exact slice after exactly one full period.
So you're checking to see if a point comes back to the exact same spot on the slice after one lap.
Yes. And we measure that using the stability theorem, which relies on something called Floquet multipliers. Every fundamental matrix has these multipliers, represented by the Greek letter rho.
So what does this all mean for the listener trying to picture this? Like, what is a Floquet multiplier actually doing physically to the cycle?
Think of a Floquet multiplier as a compound interest rate for errors.
Oh, interesting.
Let's say your system has a multiplier with an absolute value greater than 1. Mathematically, it sits outside the unit circle. Physically, that means every single time the cycle completes a lap, any tiny deviation or burst of energy multiplies. The cycle violently spirals outward and explodes.
Right. Bad news.
Very bad. Now, if the multiplier is less than 1, the cycle loses energy on every lap, spiraling inward until it completely dies out.
I see. So for a cycle to be perfectly stable, to be a true limit cycle, that compound interest rate has to be exactly 0. The multiplier has to be exactly 1.
Exactly. Its absolute value has to be exactly 1, meaning it sits perfectly on the rim of the mathematical unit circle, neither growing nor shrinking. And here is the real magic of the Purosynchos matrices.
Okay.
Because their eigenvalues are purely imaginary. Their Floquet multipliers automatically and exactly evaluate to 1.
Wait, really?
Yes. They are inherently mathematically non-divergent. You don't have to run a messy simulation to see if the system explodes. You just inspect the eigenvalues of the matrix. If they sit on that rim, you have absolute proof of a perpetual stable cycle.
That is incredibly elegant. But I have to say, this exactness sounds perfect for a sterile, isolated math problem. But the ODE-CCT framework is designed to process incredibly complex systems.
It is.
The sources talk about this 100 questions cascade to sort through massive chaotic data sets. And the real world isn't a single pristine sine wave. It's a hurricane of noise and interacting forces. So how does this beautiful mathematical certainty scale up to something so messy?
It scales by stacking layers. The framework handles complex, noisy reality by building a hierarchical Synchos matrix where each individual layer operates at a distinctly different frequency.
Okay.
This is how we connect entropy collapse to frequency layers.
Yeah.
In the CCT framework, this is known as realizing the Taylor token expansion as a frequency cascade.
A frequency cascade. Okay, break the physical mechanism of that down for me.
Imagine dissecting reality into layers of understanding based on speed. At the bottom, you have the lowest frequency layer. These are massive, slow-moving waves.
Right.
This layer represents your stationary understanding, the big picture,
yeah.
The absolute broadest trends of the data. Above that, you have the middle frequency layers. These waves move faster, and they capture probabilities and repeating patterns.
Okay, getting more detailed.
Exactly. And at the very top, you have the highest frequency layers. These are incredibly fast, tight waves that capture the absolute fine details all the way down to the quantum level resolution.
I really like that framing. If you're listening to this, it's exactly like the equalizer on your audio system. When a track is too noisy, you don't just grab the main volume knob and turn the whole thing down. You isolate the frequencies.
Right.
You use the bass to manage the broad underlying beat. You use the mid-range to clarify the melody and the patterns. And you use the treble to dial in the absolute finest details of a cymbal crash.
That is a highly accurate way to look at it. And within the 100 questions framework, every single question you ask of the data operates within a specific frequency band on that equalizer. You are systematically isolating and resolving the uncertainty at every single scale of reality.
But when dealing with entropy, with absolute chaos, how do you know when you've won? Like, how do you mathematically know that the noise is gone and the system is actually resolved?
You look for the moment of entropy collapse.
Entropy collapse.
Yes. And the framework defines this strictly. It happens when the gradient sum across all of those frequency layers simultaneously drops below a specific tiny mathematical threshold denoted as theta.
Wait, the gradient sum? Let's make sure that makes sense. A gradient is basically a measure of how steep it changes, right?
Correct. The gradient sum represents the rate of change of our uncertainty.
Yeah.
While the system is chaotic, the gradients are large, the math is constantly shifting and trying to find balance. But as you dial in those layers, the bass, the mids, the treble, the uncertainty shrinks. Entropy collapse occurs when the rate of change across every single layer hits zero at the exact same time.
So the noise in the broad strokes, the noise in the patterns, and the noise in the quantum details all simultaneously lock into place. The system literally stops shifting.
Exactly. You have perfectly resolved the chaos across every scale. And because every single layer of that equalizer is built on a Synchos matrix, you achieve this symbolically, relying on pure frequencies, without accumulating any of the numerical drift that usually plagues complex calculations.
It's just brilliant data processing. But here's where it gets really interesting, because the sources make it explicitly clear that this concept of frequency layers resolving entropy isn't just a clever software trick.
No, it's not.
We aren't just imposing this math on the world. This is literally the underlying architecture of physical reality.
It absolutely is. The universe itself demonstrates a fundamental physical preference for Synchos structures. If we look at the simplest atomic system, the hydrogen atom. In quantum mechanics, we describe the energy levels of an atom using a matrix called a Hamiltonian. Think of the Hamiltonian as the ultimate ledger of a system's total energy, tracking kinetic and potential forces.
So it's the master matrix governing how the electron behaves around the nucleus.
Right. And within the momentum space coupled cluster theory, when you look at the bound states of an electron trapped in the Coulomb potential of a nucleus, that Hamiltonian ledger naturally self-organizes into a Synchos matrix structure.
Because the physics of the atom physically forces the math to become a wavy grid.
Yes. And because the Hamiltonian is a Synchos structure, its eigenvectors, its fundamental shapes, must be sinusoidal. This is exactly why the wave functions of a hydrogen atom follow periodic patterns. The spherical harmonics that dictate the literal 3D cloud of probability where an electron exists, those are Cinco's patterns. The electron is trapped in a spherical well, so its waves have to wrap around space and meet themselves perfectly without breaking. A Cinco's matrix is quite literally the physical form of a bounded atom.
That is completely mind-bending. But the sources don't stop at atoms, do they? They take this exact same logic, this fundamental mathematical structure, and scale it up to one of the most complex, chaotic phenomena in the universe, black holes.
This is where the framework truly proves its universal scale, the black hole matrix. We know from physics that black holes aren't entirely black. They emit Hawking radiation, which has a seemingly random thermal spectrum.
Right.
But the core of the black hole information paradox asks, what happens to the data of the things that fell in? Well, the framework proposes that the information encoded inside that outgoing radiation can be perfectly represented as a Cinco's matrix, specifically arranged in the angular momentum basis.
Okay, hold on. You're saying that the spherical harmonics, the exact same Cinco's math that tells us the shape of an electron cloud in a hydrogen atom, is also dictating how lost information escapes the boundary of a black hole.
Yes, because both systems, at their core, are fundamentally periodic structures dealing with angular momentum. Every angular momentum mode of that Hawking radiation oscillates and decays at specific frequencies.
Unbelievable.
The hidden information, the entropy, is trapped in the spectrum of that angular Cinco's matrix. In fact, if you calculate the trace entropy of this matrix.
Let me jump in real quick, trace entropy. The trace of a matrix is just the sum of all the numbers running right down its main diagonal, correct?
Exactly. It's a quick way to sum up the core characteristics of the matrix ledger. The framework shows that the famous Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, which is the total measure of a black hole's internal hidden information, corresponds directly to the trace entropy of this specific Cinco's matrix.
So if I'm putting this all together, recovering lost data from a black hole, solving literally one of the greatest paradoxes in modern physics, is mathematically equivalent to simply reading the diagonal elements of a Cinco's matrix derived from its outgoing radiation.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yes. From the microscopic Planck de Broglie wavelengths of subatomic particles to electromagnetic waves bouncing inside a waveguide, all the way to the boundary flux of a supermassive black hole, the universe relentlessly optimizes for information efficiency.
It's all connected.
Exactly. And the Cinco's structure is the mathematically optimal basis for absolutely anything periodic. Any attempt to encode a repeating cycle in standard spatial matrices is not just mathematically clumsy, it is physically and computationally suboptimal.
It really forces you to take a massive step back and reevaluate what computation actually is. We started this deep dive by looking at a grand duality. The traditional band matrix is the linear algebra of space. It tells you exactly who your physical neighbors are. It calculates the cost of communication. But the Cinco's matrix is the linear algebra of time. It ignores distance and tells you exactly what phase comes next. It calculates the cost of memory.
That is the ultimate takeaway. When a trajectory in reality is periodic, it is perfectly described by a Cinco's matrix. And conversely, when you construct a matrix that is purely Cinco's, the trajectory it produces is guaranteed to be periodic.
Wow.
They are duals of the exact same physical truth. You use the spatial matrix to understand the physical layout, and you use the temporal matrix to perfectly understand how it evolves.
It really feels like finding the master clockwork of the universe, you know? Mm-hmm. If you want to know what happens tomorrow, you don't have to grind through the math of today. You don't have to guess where the individual gears are going to turn. You should just look at the geometric shape of the gear itself, and the answer is already there. But I have to ask, what happens when things don't cycle perfectly forever?
This raises an important question, and it's a crucial point detailed in the limitations section of the framework. We know that pure Cinco's matrices perfectly map perpetual stable limit cycles, the gears that never stop turning.
Right.
But the reality of the universe is that not all motion is perpetual. Cycles decay. Star systems collapse. Chemical reactions burn out.
Right. A pure sine wave theoretically stretches out to infinity in both directions. It never starts and never stops.
Exactly. A pure Cinco's matrix cannot encode an exponentially growing explosion because sine and cosine are strictly bounded by their amplitude. They stay within their lane, and they cannot encode a brief, localized pulse of energy. So to capture a cycle that explodes or decays, the framework extends the math. It replaces the pure Cinco's functions with a hyperbolic cosine matrix.
Hyperbolic cosine? How does that change the shape?
It combines that bounded, repeating oscillation with an envelope of exponential growth or decay. It's mathematically perfect for capturing damped oscillators, like a pendulum slowly grinding to a halt or driven systems that are spinning out of control.
Oh, I see.
And if we want to capture a highly localized pulse, a cycle that only flares into existence for a single moment in time, we replace the pure waves with a wavelet matrix.
A wavelet. So instead of a wave that ripples forever, it's a focused vibration that fades in from nothing, oscillates for a moment, and fades back out into nothing.
Precisely. It captures localized periodicity. By shifting from pure waves to wavelets and hyperbolic functions, we aren't just reading the eternal perpetual clockwork of the universe anymore. We are mapping the exact moments when the clock is built, when it starts ticking, and when the machinery finally winds down. We are mathematically mapping the birth and death of the cycles themselves.
Mapping the birth and death of the machinery of time. That is just an incredible concept to walk away with. We aren't just predicting the future. We are watching the architecture of reality evolve. We're going to leave it there for today. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the sources. And as always, keep asking questions and keep looking for the cycles.